Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
I always say that we are the secret sauce of the ESPN Radio lineup. So, of course, my sister kept that same energy and was cooking up a storm. Jhené and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and streaming live right now on ESPN Plus. Jhené Ogwumike and Mike Golic Jr. here. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Lines. Now, there's a lot of energy coming out of Cleveland today. The Cleveland Indians are removing their name, and the Browns now take on the Ravens tonight in Monday Night Football. Now, in about 10 minutes, we will head straight there. But right now, the news of the day, that at least the start of our show, we heard that the Eagles have named a starter their next game for versus the Cardinals, and it's Jalen Hurts. But I really want to stop with the NFL for a second and actually start with college football and the college ranks, because first, like, before we get into the nitty-gritty of the play and also the buyout situation with Auburn, I want to do a wellness check on you, Junior. How are you feeling? Notre Dame ACC championship game coming up. Like, are you still confident? Are you a little nervous? How you feeling this week?
I'm actually very excited for this game, in all seriousness, Jhené. Like, this is a year where Notre Dame's had a very great football team over the course of the season. They got a big-time win that had been evading them for so long, and I am definitely not coping right now as reports continue to mount that Notre Dame's defensive coordinator, Clark Lee, will likely be the next head coach at Vanderbilt. I'm not terrified about losing him and afraid of what happens when that finally does for a defense that's performed so well in the last few years, has some studs on it on this side, but surely has a schematic advantage because of what Clark has brought over to them. And I'm not fine. I'm fine.
It's okay.
What I'm trying to say is, yeah, everything's going great and I'm having a good time.
We keep it in the family. Previous coach was from Stanford, new coach from Notre Dame. They're tag teaming it like we are here on this show. Okay, it's not that bad. You're going to be fine. Don't worry.
And shout it out is to that Sarah bad. Fuller. Vanderbilt, leave him alone.
And let's just shout out Sarah Fuller for going 2-for-2. That was so much fun to watch. But we had some interesting games on the college football field. But I really want to start with this news out of Auburn. And to get all your thoughts, let's just do this. Wrap it all in. One and done.
So much to say.
Are you good? Like, do you need a minute to breathe? Do you need some water?
So little time.
I'm trying to balance a lot right now.
One and done.
So, Junior, this Auburn situation, why here, and specifically when you lose your coach and it's a buyout, why is it not just a normal buyout right now in the landscape of what Auburn is doing?
Yeah, so this gets really interesting because over the course of a normal year, we see all the time what goes on in college sports. Coach gets fired, coach receives massive amount of money to, in everyone's eyes, go and do nothing, and round we go. But we looked at this year and we said, in the middle of a global pandemic, you'd have to imagine schools that are talking about cutting other athletic programs that have all made a very public show of saying, look at what financial issues we are dealing with, would not go about this. And yet we look up. Will Muschamp, who was fired by South Carolina a little bit ago, $13.2 million for a buyout on his end. Gus Malzahn, just fired by Auburn, just put out his statement saying thank you to the university. Going to be owed about $21.5 million for his buyout. Kevin Sumlin, fired at Arizona, $7.5 million. Lovie Smith, fired at Illinois, $2 million. I mean, I can go all the way back. We've seen buyouts in college. They're nothing new. My former head coach, Charlie Weiss at Notre Dame, ended up earning over $18 million from the university after he was let go. That's not different. The interesting part, the different part, is this, and it's something Amanda Mull, who writes for The Atlantic, I thought had a great tweet. I remember a few months ago, she said, when everyone was like, no one's going to fire their coach with all the pandemic budget problems. This year's been weird enough that we forgot for a second that college football operates separate from common sense, labor laws, economics, and linear time. It's a reminder that college football can say that they complain about money, can say that things are going wrong for their athletic departments, and you have seen, they have showed us, they will operate no differently because the end game is still the same. And so it's just a reminder, not that college football, you know, needs to change. We know that's probably been long overdue, but more so that college football is probably not interested in changing. And so when we have these conversations about paying players, when we have conversations about name, image, and likeness, don't listen to bad actors who say, well, if the players are making money off of this, it's going to take away from women's sports. It's going to take away from X, Y, or Z. It's going to make these athletic departments less sustainable, when the football programs themselves, operating as currently they are, need way more reworking for way better reasons than you trying to keep money continually out of the hands of students. So just remind yourself how the game is, not how you think it's supposed to be. That part just gets annoying, Janae. Like, everyone looks at it, and it's like pennies compared to what Auburn is going to pay Gus Malzahn to leave right now in the middle of this season. Yep. Them to do that in the middle of this pandemic shows they believe they can always find money somewhere else. They're always going to come up with that somewhere else. So I'm a little less hard-pressed to listen to the belly aching that comes from these athletic departments.
Yeah, the irony given this year and the complexities of the pandemic on top of what the student athletes are feeling and trying to advocate just really is unparalleled. But I also want to ask you, because we do this every Friday, you tell me why certain things happen when it comes to college football. Because if I earlier NBA analyst, you right now college football analyst, it was really interesting watching the slate of games and seeing how the outcomes played out. Speaking of ironies, LSU beating Florida after they imposed their own bowl ban. Like, what did you make of that whole situation?
Wow. What did I make of that whole situation, Chinee? That was one of the strangest occurrences I have ever seen in college football. I want you to listen to what this sounded like, because in the middle of a game that broke out inside what appeared to be dense fog between LSU and Florida, a game that should never have been as close as it was, but LSU depleted their roster, absolutely sacked by injuries, everything of the like, finds themselves able to potentially win this game. And Florida almost is able to thwart that until one unbelievable unsportsmanlike penalty. Take a listen to this sound from the game and listen to how specific the pain gets.
And a catch made, but the Gators tackle Cole Tyler shy of the line to gain. He tried to hurdle two defenders and could not get high enough. And so it'll be fourth down, and the Gators are going to get the ball back, but there is a flag on the play. 1:51 left in the fourth. The officials huddle to discuss the flag. The defender threw the shoe after it came off the foot of Cole Taylor. Very hard to kind of see that through the fog. So we're going to await a very big outcome of this flag.
After the play, unsportsmanlike conduct. Number 11 of the defense throwing the LSU player's shoe 20 yards down the field. That's his first unsportsmanlike conduct foul of the game. Automatic first down.
That number 11, again, that was from Mick Hubert and Learfield IMG College. Chinee, number 11 was Marco Wilson on Florida's defense, who, in a fit of joy and after making a play he thought was going to stop this LSU drive and allow Florida, who was ranked number 6 in the playoff poll the last couple of weeks and thought they might have a shot controlling their own destiny in the SEC championship game, sent that one all packing and allowed LSU's kicker to make a 57-yard field goal in the fog to give them a win in that game. And Chinee, for Marco, who is going to find himself receiving a lot of scrutiny this week, and hopefully not a lot of the other awful stuff that we know comes with college sports at certain times, people taking things way too seriously and way too far, that's going to be something he can never get away from, sadly. That is probably going to define a lot of the rest of his career, the rest of his life, that one play in the middle of a game that ultimately cost Florida their championship hopes this season.
And speaking of bizarre performances, you also saw this weekend UNC ran all over Miami. Their two running backs combined for, I believe, 544 rushing yards. How does this happen? I know we don't have much time.
It happens because all year Miami was going by on what was a relatively light schedule. And Derek King's an incredible player, but I think he masked a lot of deficiencies that were always there on this Miami team and that Manny Diaz is going to have to address in a very real way going forward before we're talking about his job being on the hot seat and the growing frustration with Miami fans there. So I encourage Miami fans, like I do Michigan fans all the time, if you need to take this out by tweeting me the score of the Notre Dame-Miami game from a few years ago to make yourselves feel better. Go ahead. I am here for you in this instance. I am willing to help you out in this one because I don't want to see my friends
hurt. That's only because your team is high in the ranks. That's it.
No, listen, I'm a giver. I don't like to see people hurt. Michigan fans and Miami fans, they need help right now. They need our collective help, and we need to be here for them, Janae.
Okay. All right.
Was that convincing?
No, not at all.
All right, good, because I didn't mean a word of it. Coming up next, though, a lot of convincing still going on for Cleveland on the football field. What do the Browns need to do tonight to send a message to the rest of the NFL that this is a team that can contend with the Bills, with the Kansas City Chiefs, when it comes to the NFL playoffs upcoming here? And did Cleveland do the right thing on the side of their baseball team, changing their name? We'll get to all that next. It's Chinee and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Let's go. Tonight, Monday Night Football matchup between the Ravens and the Browns. I have been waiting to wear a shirt this entire season once Lamar Jackson gets that signature win. And here we are In week 14, your girl is still waiting. Chinee Ngolick Jr. on ESPN Radio and streaming live on ESPN Plus. Chinee Ogwumike, Mike Golick Jr. here. Now, speaking of Cleveland, let's go there, because right now we are really hyped to head to the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line to chat with Emmett Golden of ESPN Cleveland in primetime on ESPN Radio. Now, Emmett, thank you so much for joining us. Right now, this Monday Night Football matchup we've all been looking forward to. And it's been really interesting because the way the season started, what was it? Week one, 38-6 output, but Cleveland has really come a long way since then, now 9-3. What do you think is the realistic ceiling for this team right now in the division?
Oh, right now, I mean, in the division, if they're able to get this win tonight, then they're just outside of catching the Steelers, something that would have been foolish to think 4 or 5 weeks ago. But the Browns are playing their best football right now. And throughout this season, they haven't hit on all cylinders, but they've still been able to get W's. And if you can get wins and have some tape to learn from, it's usually beneficial. And you've seen Kevin Stefanski just really take hold of this team and help them improve every week by not trying to do too much, not putting everything on Baker, but giving Baker a lot of support.
This is part of our Monday Night Football kickoff brought to you by Progressive Insurance. And I am curious, Emmett, it seems like nationally a lot of people are quick to, and I'm curious if it's the same in Cleveland. Almost give more of the credit to Kevin Stefanski than Baker Mayfield at this point. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think that's accurate because, I mean, I just think it's fact. Last year with Freddie Kitchens, Freddie put the Cleveland Browns success on Baker Mayfield's shoulders. And Baker wasn't ready for that. You know, just to be honest, he wasn't ready. This year, Kevin Stefanski came in. They did a great job in the offseason of building the offensive line. They already had Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, and Kevin Stefanski decided, hey, let's, you know, use that dirty word, have Baker be a game manager until he's ready to really take over the reins and be the guy to lead this offense. And he's been doing that all season long. The attitude of this team, the fact that they're focused, they're composed, and disciplined. This was an extremely undisciplined team last year. All that credit goes to Kevin Stefanski.
Emmett Golden of ESPN Cleveland and primetime on ESPN Radio here with us on Chinee Ngolick Jr. Now, it's funny how we use that word and say it's dirty game manager, but how would you evaluate Baker's management so far of this season? Because I can't, like, we know Cleveland. I feel like game manager is just never good enough.
Oh, no, it was not good enough at all. Now, especially when you were the number one pick overall, right? But Cleveland has been starving for success and to see their football team win. So it's been good enough. Now, a lot of people believe in Baker Mayfield here. I'm believing in Baker right now. And I think the way that they've really approached this has helped him out a ton. You know, by establishing the run so early on in the season, the play-action game is deadly right now. And if you can get Baker some confidence by throwing to some open guys, the next thing you know, by the end of the second, early third quarter, he's throwing dimes all over the place. And again, it's just the mad scientist that is Kevin Stefanski that he said, let's start out, let's not – you know, expect Baker to win the game. Let's make sure he doesn't lose it for us. And right now, Baker is the guy that is winning games because he certainly did it last week.
And that's certainly the hope going into tonight for the Browns against the Ravens on Monday Night Football. This Monday Night Football preview is brought to you by Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, homes, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Now, Emmett, one of the other big bits of news we know coming out of Cleveland is the baseball team. The Indians come out and announce that they are going to be changing that name following the 2021 season here. We know this is such a big topic of conversation over the summer when the Washington football team made their decision, but I'm curious, Emmett, why now for Cleveland? Why now for the baseball team here?
Well, you know, it was a big story, especially locally at the beginning of this baseball season, because you had Terry Francona come out and say, I think it's time for a change. The players opted to wear the blue uniforms on opening day that said Cleveland across the chest instead of the team name. So it was a very hot topic. We had people calling, giving us name ideas, a lot of them really bad. But then it disappeared and it went away. And I was a little skeptical. I started wondering, will they really change the name? Talked to some people around the team. They said it's coming. Don't worry about it. But I do think that they kind of got caught off guard by that report yesterday. And maybe they weren't quite ready to announce their plan. But it's something that they have been, you know, talking to people in the Native American community about throughout this entire year.
It really is interesting. It's going to be fascinating to watch going forward. Like you said, outside of callers trying to name the team, it's certainly a lot to be handled, as we've seen in Washington, from that branding side of things, but a big step in the right direction for a lot of the reasons that you mentioned. Emmett, we appreciate all the time and the insights on everything Cleveland right now, man. We'll talk to you soon, all right?
Thanks, Emmett.
All right. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Emmett Golden of ESPN Cleveland, and also Primetime on ESPN Radio that you can check out here on the weekends. And Chiney, it really is interesting. He mentioned them being caught off guard, because we did question, why announce this when you don't plan on actually making these changes substantive until after the 2021 season? Why wait so long to do the thing that you're announcing? What is this really announcement about? So it makes sense that now there's something must have forced their hand in this instance.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense, especially if someone else knew, and probably it's better to come from ourselves and our team because we were having these internal discussions. But speaking of discussions, it's really interesting because as we discuss situations that have been presented like this in the past with the Washington football team most recently, I think the way forward, and speaking to Jason Wright, so we had him on our show, the president of the Washington football team, who has really been just tremendous advocate for them, explaining exactly what's going on and also the culture they're trying to build. It's been interesting because I had the ability to talk to him on a podcast that I was on with Lisa Leslie, and that's right after the news that people heard that, we're making strides with the name change, or we're trying to get, he actually said, oh, that was my bad, I was being a little bit too transparent, which is a good thing, transparency and information. And I think this is the trouble here. When you make this change of name, I think a lot of organizations want to get the community's input, and they took that input to actually take that feedback and carry it through with action, saying they're going to change the name. But now the community wants to be a part of the process. And I think that's why that date is further in the future than what we sort of expected. We want to change the name. Oh, but we don't know what that is. Obviously that's an awkward situation and place to be, but still, I think the community will actually be involved in saying, hey, take this suggestion. And that's what Jason sort of alluded to us on that podcast in that process.
Jason has the unfortunate job of trying to cover up for someone else's mistakes and Dan Snyder and what's going on in that organization. Jason is going to, I imagine, say and do the right things in this spot, but these ultimately come down to places that had changed largely forced upon them in these instances here, and they're reacting to most of what goes on. And I think that's the same case for Cleveland right now, who I believe the understanding is that, and Irina, there's an article on the Associated Press, there's an article on ESPN.com, the team has still never stopped selling merchandise bearing Chief Wahoo in Cleveland when it comes to that baseball team. But we've seen, as that goes on, and people are weirdly hesitant to go away from that because of the dollars and cents associated with advertising, that Washington, up until right now, yes, you're going to need a mascot and a thing to market because so much of this is about making money. But Washington has demonstrated that the name on the side of the helmet doesn't preclude people from rooting your team when it's good in leading the NFC East right now relative to that division. When it's got people on there you can actually root for, like Alex Smith, who has come back and overcome so much, the name on the side of the helmet all of a sudden fades into a bit more obscurity because it was never about the name to begin with. It's only about people who want to feel particular and hold on to a thing and not have to change just because someone else told them that they needed to. So we'll watch that change develop rather slowly in Cleveland, but knowing it's coming and knowing the right thing is eventually going to be done is half the battle. But Emmett did talk about what to expect from Cleveland, so let's dive into that next. The Ravens do or die for their playoff hopes tonight on Monday Night Football. Can Baker and the boys send together another message to the NFL? We'll get to that next. It's Chiney and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio.
Chiney and Golic Jr., the podcast.
This show is very, very Notre Dame, and rightfully so due to this college football season so far, but it's also college basketball season, and this week is Stanford Week. Chiney and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and streaming live on ESPN Plus. Chiney Ogwumike and Mike Golic Jr. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Lines. Now, we are on Tara Vanderveer watch, and I will explain that this week in about 10 minutes, but, as I said earlier, it is also Monday Sunday Night Football. And I did mention that, you know, that week one matchup where the score was 38-6 between the Browns and the Ravens. Clearly a lot has changed since then. Team has really started trending in different directions. So we all recognize, especially Emmett Golden, who joined us of ESPN Cleveland not too long ago, that this is truly a statement game, Junior, for the Browns, because it feels like they've sort of been like the little brother to Pittsburgh and the little brother to Baltimore. And now they can sort of, I guess you can say, exact a little bit of revenge here and show that they're a team that can make some noise in the playoffs. But I feel like on the other end of the spectrum here, when it comes to the Ravens and this is a layup, this has to be a must-win game for them, right, Junior?
Yes, Janae, at risk of stating the overwhelmingly obvious here. Yeah, no, the Ravens got to go out and get this done, you know, for their playoff lives in this, how competitive the AFC's been at the top of this league this year. It's no question, and it's strange, Janae, because I look at this now, and I believe, courtesy of the ESPN Football Power Index, they give the Baltimore Ravens a 65.9% chance to win this game tonight, looking at this matchup with the Browns. And I'd have to imagine a fair amount of that resides up front for the Baltimore Ravens and their ability to harass quarterbacks, because a lot like what we've talked about today with the Buffalo Bills about how that team, and this isn't like a revelatory football idea here, when Josh Allen gets kept clean, he is a very good quarterback. When Josh Allen is under pressure, the numbers dip, but his dip more so than most. And I think for Baker Mayfield, what we've seen with this team is when they can go out there, get him in play action situations, allow Nick Chubb to go and dominate in the ground. The Cleveland Browns, make no bones about it, they're first in yards per rush on first down in the NFL this season. They average over 5.5 yards a carry on that down, one that's become increasingly less run friendly as the years have gone on. But that's who they are. The tip of the spear is Nick Chubb, and Baker Mayfield benefits when this O-line goes out there and does the job. So that's the beginning of the end in the matchup in my mind, Janae. That and what can Lamar Jackson do on the other side, knowing the opponent is no longer the Dallas Cowboys.
But obviously, like you talked about and joked about it earlier, Baker is exceptional when it comes to commercials, but also we're starting to see this change because I feel like there have been key moments here. Obviously, Odell's injury was a key moment that a lot of people were like, okay, we'll see what Baker's made of. And now you had the opportunity when both teams, the Tennessee Titans and the Browns, were 8-3 facing off, and they made a huge statement. And now we've seen the shift where Baker Mayfield has ranked in the top 5 in yards per attempt, passer rating, and posting one interception, I believe is versus Cincy, and a crazy number of TDs, 11, since week 7 and to this point. So what have you noticed amongst Baker? Do you think he's finally feeling a little bit more comfortable, or do you think something has really clicked besides getting that ground game going?
Yeah, Janae, I'm glad you mentioned the Odell portion of that, because I know Baker Mayfield did a sit-down interview with Keyshawn Johnson that's going to air tonight before the game, and then I'm sure they played this morning on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. And one of the things that he asked him was about the injury to Odell, and Baker gave a great answer and said, I hate that for Odell, because Odell works his you-know-what off for this team. And Baker pointed out with Kevin Stefanski, we didn't get a full offseason to implement this offense. We didn't get a full offseason together to make these changes. And Baker felt like right at the same time Odell got injured, this team was finally getting enough reps, just live reps out there on the field, that we've seen benefit so many teams when it comes to having to digest something as new as Kevin Stefanski's offense going into this year. And so I think for Baker, it is just that familiarity, though. It's what he hinted at there. It's reps and it's their investments paying off. They went out there and they got Jack Conklin from Tennessee as a free agent. They went and drafted Jedrick Wills. They've invested with draft capital of their own there in Cleveland, and they've found a way to build a group in front that can protect him and sustain the style of play that Kevin Stefanski wants to bring in here, that wants to mimic what some of the best offenses in the NFL do, what we see the Rams work so well with, the 49ers, what's worked so well in the past for Kirk Cousins and the Vikings, is play-action heavy offense that can buoy quarterbacks that are otherwise a little less remarkable. And for Baker Mayfield to be a former number one overall pick, that might sting for some people to hear, but it's the best way you go about making the best of what you've got.
And it's funny because that's how seasons happen. On one side, you have the expectation of, oh, we expect a lot, but you guys haven't been able to manage it when it comes to the Browns. And then we had super high expectations after an MVP season from Lamar Jackson. And now seeing that, like, it's easy to say that the Cowboys are your get-right game and you feel really well. You play really well, especially when they can't stop the run, and then that's what you do exceptionally well. Like, clearly a lot of things work in your favor. But do you see anything that indicates that the Baltimore Ravens are trending in the right direction outside of that nice matchup matchup versus the Cowboys.
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do with the team that you played in that instance, Janae, because, again, they've just been so ravaged by injury in certain spots. I know as the former offensive lineman, I tend to focus there, but that group got beat up front. They had no Mark Andrews and no Willie Snead in that receiving core. Like, COVID hit that team super hard, and we'll wait and see what that effect could potentially be like, because we don't know necessarily how that affects everybody and their ability to play. But this is a team that we talked about the ground success on first down running. All other downs combined, the Baltimore Ravens lead the NFL in yards per carry, and that might not necessarily translate to as much winning in 2020's version of football, but if you're Lamar Jackson in a passing game that struggled because of some regression and because of a lack of the consistency of guys on the field, being able to go back to that and making creative use of Lamar in that one area where he's an overwhelming strength, I think at this time of year, we've seen the benefit of simplifying in so many other places. Simplifying, like we talked about in Cleveland, simplifying for Jalen Hurts and the Philadelphia Eagles, and maybe simplifying the formula somewhat here for Baltimore will give them their best chance to allow that defense to go out on the other side and go get some work in.
Yep. We'll see if I'll be able to wear the shirt tomorrow. I don't think so, but
Janae has been talking about this shirt for going
it's
on
nothing
15
crazy.
Weeks.
I've just been waiting for it, and it's probably not even the best shirt anymore. It probably doesn't even, it's not even that accurate.
Janae, this is a classic case of when you tease, you could tell someone, hey, I got a story to tell you, and your schedules just don't line up and you can't get to it. And now the pressure starts to mount because no story is usually ever worth 3 or 4 days
it's
of
not,
time,
it's
let
not.
Alone 14 weeks of
an NFL
season.
It was a $10
shirt
on Amazon. No.
Well,
so.
Janae, rest assured, we are still going to make you pay up around here if and when this does happen. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. At Progressive, they're making things even easier. They'll help you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at progressive.com. All right, coming up next, you mentioned it's Tara Vanderveer week. We are on Tara Vanderveer Watch this week. And we have got to play you the best sound I heard from this NFL weekend. The agony of defeat summed up about as perfectly as you will ever hear it. We'll get to that next. It's Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Loves the show out. He's playing some Road to Me, Afro vibes, putting me in the vibe this week, especially. Stanford has made the news, but first we had big football energy after a Sunday and a big AFC North Monday tonight with Monday Night Football, and we had the best to break it all down here on Chinee and Gold Jr. Chinee Ogwumike, Mike Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We had Emmett Golden of ESPN Cleveland to break down the Browns side of things, plus the Cleveland Indians now choosing to change their name in the near future. I guess it's kind of near. We had Edmina Kimes, ESPN NFL analyst, who joined us to talk Jalen Hurts and the Eagles after making him their starter again. And last but certainly, and I'm saying certainly like a fact, certainly not least, Ariel Helwani joined us today, ESPN MMA insider. And also make sure you check out Ariel's show, the MMA show. He is now a clear-cut rival to our own Christine Lisi for biggest Bills fans. I'm telling you right now, listen to that combo. It was a Hall of Fame mic drop type of segment that we had with Ariel. And you can check it out on the Chinee and Golic Jr. podcast, or you can watch our entire show all over again if you missed something and you're curious about it on ESPN Plus.
Do it. Download that. Make sure you check out Ariel Helwani, who basically went scorched earth in here, burned everything and everyone around him, this company, us. We had to walk him back and kind of get Christine Lisi, who is the foremost Bills fan of ESPN Radio around these parts, to vouch for us that we're in it. We're Bills Mafia approved in a lot of ways. And so all's well that ends well there, but make sure you check out all of that right now. And if you want energy, Ariel Helwani's got it. We've got it. Let's keep it going here. We want to be a jolt of energy.
Yeah, the energy level was really high there.
And now we want to keep that same energy going.
Keeping that same energy.
Keep that same energy.
You can just sense that there was a tremendous amount of energy.
With Janae and Golic Jr.
All right,
and can I start here, though, just because I want to give a shout-out really quick, Junior, to my shirt. I'm wearing a vote shirt with the Georgia peach on it because the election still matters, especially when it comes to two Senate seats. And so I am rocking this shirt in honor of everyone to continue to do our civic duty in Georgia. And this was made by the one and only WNBA, of course.
The WNBA, they vote shirt with a Georgia peach inside the O for everyone listening on radio. A great reminder. The W has been such a great job of reminding people to get out and vote. Chinee, you've done so much work with More Than a Vote and everyone else throughout this year. So, a good reminder for all, get out there and vote. All of these processes matter. It's not just about the big election that everybody gets to participate in. So, but Janae, this is your show right now anyway, because we'll get to some of the best and the worst from the world of kicking, both collegiately and in the NFL. But we got big news out of your alma mater, so why don't you have a Stanford moment here?
And shout out to Neko Ogwemeke, who's actually watching the show right now. So she left me, but she's still watching and still supporting. Love you, sis, because my sister went to Stanford and made that decision, and then I followed her there, and we tag-teamed in. Was lit. But guess what? Stanford women's basketball is on the map right now, the number one ranked team in the nation. And yesterday, our coach Tara Vanderveer reached 1,098 wins, tying the late greats Pat Summitt for that milestone and likely breaking that next game. Versus Pacific, I believe. Yes, versus Pacific. So shout out to Coach Tara. I am so happy to be one of her students because she's not just a coach. She's like a teacher of the game. So many people love her and appreciate her. But shout out to Fran Bellaby. I mean, this is a young sophomore that a lot of people found her highlights when she played in the McDonald's All-American game and dunked. And Fran dunked last night. So think about it. Coach Tara, she makes history tying Coach Pat Summitt for all-time wins in women's basketball history. And in that game, Fran Bellaby goes coast to coast as you're watching on ESPN+ and dunks and does a dirty dunk. That is my school, Stanford University. I know you love Notre Dame, but guess what? It's all Stanford week and we are on Tara Vanderveer watch as she likely breaks the record and becomes all-time leader next game. Woo. Okay, I'm good now. Okay.
Ooh, Fran Van, thank you, ma'am, right?
We stand for Fran.
It works out really well. Fran, very great headline name right here. So we'll expect more headlines from her. We will expect more headlines from Tara Vanderveer in the week that's going to go on here for Stanford Women's Hoops. Very excited about that. But Shanae, we've also got something else to be excited about. We talked before about gaffes in college football. Marco Wilson at Florida and the shoe throw heard around the world this weekend in the Gators' loss to LSU. But there was another big-time moment in the SEC this weekend surrounding Vanderbilt and Sarah Fuller. Sarah Fuller, who was a part of the kickoff, the squib kick situation that a lot of the haters and the doubters came out here and decided to have words with. And so I give a lot of credit to Vanderbilt, who just parted ways with Derek Mason, who was out here in a game against Tennessee, and who decided to make good. Their starting kicker was back healthy and available, but they know in the last game they didn't get a chance to get Sarah Fuller in field goal range. She got to go out there, absolutely drained an extra point, and silenced whatever lame doubters were left in this situation, going out and putting her talents on display.
What I love about this is by seeing her succeed, there are young girls all over the world practically that are going to say, guess what? Maybe, like, I love football. Maybe this is the position where I can actually make a dent and make a mark. It's going to be amazing to see that happen the next few years.
It doesn't matter what talent looks like. Talent is what this is about, and she's got it and performed exceptionally well. Someone who did not, unfortunately, was Dan Bailey for the Minnesota Vikings, a kicking tour de force no this weekend, and really in the last couple of weeks, and nothing sells it like the local radio call for all this. So here is a wonderful montage to the pain that Vikings fans felt this weekend.
Come on, Dan. Come on, Dan. Snap spot. Bailey missed the extra point, my God. Come on! That's his third missed extra point the last two games. Dan Bailey with a 36-yard try, left hash. Snap, good, spot, down. Bailey missed it. He's broken.
Are you kidding me?
He's broken. That's the only way to put it. He is absolutely broken. Ridiculous. Dan Bailey with a 54-yard try, right hash. Snap, good, spot, down.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, he missed it to his right by 40 feet?
At least. You got Bailey coming out, and you make this field goal, Paul. It's a one-touchdown game.
It's a 46-yard try for Dan Bailey. Snap spot. Dan Bailey missed it to the right. He's 0 of 3 on field goals.
Wow.
He's missed all four kicks today.
Those calls courtesy of KFAN and the Minnesota Vikings Radio Network. That is the sound of pure, unfiltered pain, Shanae. In a game, the Vikings lose to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers by 12 points, 9 of them left on the board in that instance, and 10 added to the extra point list by Dan Bailey, who's having a rough couple of weeks.
Michael Jr., we're proudly nerds, correct?
What's that?
We're proudly nerds, correct?
Absolutely.
We like taking tests, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, here's a test for you. What do I always say after performances like that? My coach says it best. We call them tarisms. What's the quote?
Sometimes you're the bear.
Oh, no! No! No!
What is it?
No! You tried it! Try again!
What is it? I'm clearly flustered now. You need to say it.
Sometimes you're the dog, and sometimes you're the hydrant. That was a quote. That was a tourism.
I know the quote by a different name. It's sometimes you're the bear, and sometimes the bear gets you. We all have different ways.
Help the bear. No, not that one either.
You know what?
Dang it, man.
Help me in this show. Help Sarah Spain and Jason Fitzpatrick.
We love you.
Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.